Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we have one hell of a debate between Tommy Lahren on the right, Reeva Martin on the left. It's really something. But we begin with Eric Swalwell. It's the first time we've talked to him on The Issue Is. He's a Democratic congressman from the East Bay. He ran for president, was the first person to drop out. He's on the Intelligence Committee. He's been a big, fierce critic of President Trump on the impeachment issue. He's been in a lot of the big meetings on the impeachment issue. We talked to him about that. Talked to him about PG&E, the big power outages, especially in Northern California. Talked about his run, and we had some fun, too. So let's begin with Congressman Eric Swalwell. Congressman, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thanks so much, Alex.
So the impeachment question. You've heard a lot of evidence. You've heard a lot more evidence than most people because of some of these meetings that you've been in. Based off of what you have heard so far, is there any way that Democrats don't impeach President Trump?
Well, the president's going to get a fair hearing, and that is going to be the case even though he has confessed to it and Mick Mulvaney has co-signed that confession. But just to kind of lay out what we're looking at here, you have a crime of possibly extortion, bribery, soliciting a foreign government to help your campaign. It doesn't seem to be that there's much dispute about the crime. You have the president essentially on that call record asking the Ukrainians to investigate his opponent and leveraging the aid to the Ukrainians unless they did that. And then yesterday, Mulvaney, of course, confirmed that. And we have a cover-up. So crime, confession, ongoing cover-up and efforts to prevent Congress from learning what's going on. He still is entitled to a fair hearing. He's going to get that, but we're going to move as expeditiously as possible because of the stakes of an upcoming election and national security implications.
Have you heard enough evidence so far to vote for impeachment?
Well, I want to make sure that the hearing is fair. I was a prosecutor before I came to Congress, and even in cases where the suspect confessed to the crime, it was important because of our system of law and the rule of law that people get a fair process. So I want to make sure that, you know, we hear from the witnesses. And you know, Alex, we've asked them, the White House and the State Department, to provide witnesses and documents, and they refuse. And as far as I see it, it's not just to help us in our investigation. Considering the overwhelming evidence that shows the president conducted this act of extortion, it's in their interest, if they have proof of innocence or exculpatory evidence, to send that our way, and they continue to refuse to do so. And so we can only conclude that that is a consciousness of guilt.
Part of the reason that they are refusing, they say, is because there has not been an official vote in the House for an impeachment inquiry to begin. Even if that's not required, why not have a vote if you have the votes and just to take away that talking point?
Well, in the history of investigations, no investigator has allowed a suspect to dictate the terms and the timeline of an investigation, and we're not going to let Donald Trump do that. And, you know, we're not interested in talking points. We're interested in, you know, the evidence and the Constitution and the oath that we all swore. And we also are mindful that Donald Trump is loosey with the football here. If we had a vote that we're not required to have just to satisfy Donald Trump, he'll come up with a new reason the very next day as to why he's not going to cooperate. We have seen his prior acts before as it relates to working with Congress, so we're not going to waste the American people's time by chasing down the rabbit hole all of Donald Trump's requirements for what he thinks would be an appropriate investigation.
The key thing that Democrats have identified as a problem is President Trump withholding aid from Ukraine. But there was an incident a few years ago when Joe Biden was vice president himself where he talked about the U.S. withholding aid to Ukraine. We want to play this and then get your reaction.
Yep.
And I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference. And I said, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a got fired.
What do you see as the difference between those two?
Yeah, it's a fair question. The difference is that at the time and still today, the official foreign policy position of the United States was that aid for Ukraine would require Ukraine to root out corruption. And the prosecutor that the vice president was referring to was widely viewed internationally as a corrupt prosecutor. And so the vice president was executing the stated foreign policy of the United States. Here, the president in that phone call with President Zelensky of Ukraine is not talking about corruption writ large in Ukraine. He is talking about the Bidens and investigating the 2016 election, which essentially would exculpate Russia. So there's a big difference. The vice president was acting in the interest of the United States taxpayers. Donald Trump was acting in the interest of his upcoming election.
There's a lot of other issues. We could go on impeachment all day, but there's also a lot of big issues back home. And one of the biggest issues back home is what's going on with PG&E, where more than a million Californians had their power taken off preemptively out of fears that these lines could spark a fire like what we've seen in the past. Is this a sustainable process where for all the months where there's potential fire danger, people are just in the dark? And is there something that went wrong with the management and the regulation of PG&E from the Democrats in California that created this situation in the first place?
Well, we can't live this way. We can't live this way as far as the new climate environment in California and do nothing about climate. And we can't have PG&E do nothing and, you know, not harden their systems and their lines to prevent, you know, future fires. So first, just as a country, we need to address, you know, climate change and act expeditiously, you know, to do that. But PG&E has to make clear to the taxpayers that we are spending wisely to prevent future fires caused by, you know, wind debris being blown into their transmission lines. And they need to move quickly. I don't think there should be any bonuses for anyone at PG&E. I think all of the money right now needs to be spent on hardening their systems. And it's unacceptable that we would have any more fire seasons like this. And, you know, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't position. If they had done nothing in this most recent fire season, they claim they have evidence that there would have been over a dozen potential fires because of debris that hit the lines. And because of what they did, of course, they put people at risk and small businesses lost money. None of us want to live that way. And, you know, my message to them is we have to move as quickly as possible.
Another big story this week, the debate between the presidential candidates. Of course, you were on stage for the first presidential debate. I'm wondering sort of what goes through your mind when you watch one of these debates and sort of what were some of the most important takeaways for you from actually running for president?
I very much enjoyed watching that debate from my couch. And my wife asked me, she said, "Are you thinking in your head of how you would answer each of these questions?" And I told her, "No, I'm thinking in my head how relieved I am that I don't have to answer these questions and I can evaluate these candidates as someone who would work with them in Congress and also as a father of two kids who cares deeply about what their policy means for our families." But right now, I think you have to show two things. You have to show that you're going to be presidential, especially as you have this parallel impeachment inquiry going on, and that you won't conduct yourself the way that Donald Trump has and put the country through this again. But second, you have to address some of the core issues about making sure that hard work still adds up to something in America and that you have an economic vision to do that. So you have to have, you know, 2 feet in two different lanes here. And, you know, I saw a number of candidates who I thought did that well.
But you're not ready to endorse yet.
No. And, you know, actually, yeah. I've talked to many of them privately about gun safety, which is an issue I'm really passionate about. And I enjoy, you know, just seeing that issue elevated on the debate stage.
Sure. Okay. Well, when you are, come make news on The Issue Is. But something else we like to do on The Issue Is that we like to have some fun. So we're going to play a game. This is called Either Or. Friends or Seinfeld?
Friends.
Beer or tequila?
Ooh. You know, I was at an airport bar and I ordered a beer and the guy asked me if I wanted for $5 a tequila shot. And I said, why not? So I think I can take both on that one.
Oh, there you go. Big man. And finally, this was the week of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame
upselling.
Nominations. Yeah. So two of the nominees this week.
Okay.
Dave Matthews Band or Doobie Brothers?
Ooh, I'm going to go Doobie.
Doobie Brothers. I'm surprised.
Our thanks to Congressman Eric Swalwell. Now to that debate between Tommy Lahren on the right, the Fox Nation host, and Areva Martin on the left, who's an attorney, author, activist. Both of them have been frequent guests on the show. Neither have been on together. And we begin with the big issue of impeachment.
You ready for this?
Let's do it.
Let's have some fun.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right, so let's start with the opening question. Counsel, should the president be impeached?
Yeah, I think there's been a pretty persuasive case made for impeachment. And one of the things I want to help viewers understand is when you listen to some of the Republican talking points, you know, you keep hearing about there's no quid pro quo. And that's just a red herring, because we're not talking about a criminal prosecution where there is a burden on a prosecutor to, you know, present evidence and have a finding beyond reasonable doubt. We're talking about high crimes and misdemeanors. And that is within the province of the Congress to decide. And that's why we have this, you know, this prosecutorial-like grand jury investigation that's happening with the Democratic Congress. But when you look at the phone call, when you look at the July phone call between Trump and the president of the Ukraine, you look at the readout of that call, you look at the comments made by Trump himself, and what we're hearing about these witnesses that are giving deposition testimony, I think there's a very persuasive case that Trump has committed high crimes and misdemeanors, and that the Democratic Congress is ready to file articles
of
impeachment.
They're ready for a lot of things, but they're not ready to take a vote on it because they just want this swirling cloud of doubt over the president's head, as they have for the last 3 years, without actually having to take a vote to do anything, so that they don't actually have to be put in a position where this could affect their election chances. So we just want to talk about it, keep talking about it, keep having that be the discussion of the country without actually moving forward. If you're so confident, take a vote, then let's move forward.
Are you concerned, though, with the substance of what the president has admitted, which is that he asked the president of Ukraine to investigate his political opponent, the Bidens? Are you concerned about that? Is that a good precedent?
Our president put out the transcript of the call because he's confident in what he said. And, you know, that is, again, like I've said before, I would have preferred that our president didn't do that, but our president wanted to root out corruption, which is something when Biden was vice president, he was tasked with rooting out corruption in Ukraine. We know that that went sideways, but our president has a vested interest in corruption in Ukraine, and he's trying to root it out, and there are issues there. I wish that the mainstream media would have done their due diligence so that the president didn't. I wish Congress would have done their due diligence to look into what exactly was going on with the Biden family and that corruption and that quid pro quo, so that Donald Trump wouldn't have had to make that suggestion.
First of all, we got to correct the record. Donald Trump was not anxious, and he didn't voluntarily release the readout of the phone call. He was pressured into doing that because of the whistleblower. So let's be real clear.
Where is your whistleblower,
well,
by the way?
Let's be real clear about the facts here. We can't just make stuff up out of whole cloth. And second of all, the Congress does not have an obligation to have a vote on an impeachment inquiry. That is not in the Constitution.
You can't make up the rules
as you go. And the Democratic Congress, the majority, just like if the Republicans were in majority, get to decide how that inquiry process works. So there's nothing constitutionally requiring this
vote.
Wouldn't
that make the justification for it? Why not take a vote?
Because this is the issue that Republicans don't get. This is an investigation. And once this investigation is completed, then the evidence will become public. And Donald Trump will have an opportunity to defend himself. His due process rights, as they continue to falsely state, he's not been deprived of his due process rights. And to your point about if you're so confident, why doesn't Donald Trump just come out and release all the information rather than say, I'm going to obstruct. I'm not going to respond to any legitimate subpoena from the Congress, which has a constitutional duty for oversight. So if there's confidence in the president, release the documents.
If they held that vote, though, that you're talking about, and it passed, do you think the president would then say, okay, here's all that information?
I think that it would put him in a position to be able to defend himself. Listen, this president has been hunted for 3 years now. The Mueller investigation, that's what I heard before. It's like deja vu. When the investigation comes out, that came out, no collusion, no obstruction, then they moved on to Ukraine. And then again, they want to back this president into a corner. He is smarter than that, but he knows, take your vote, because he knows that there are vulnerable Democrats who are in areas that could flip red-blue, and they don't want to put their neck out on the line and go for impeachment. They don't want to say to their constituents that that's what their priority is. That's why Nancy does not want to take this vote. Donald Trump knows that, and he's playing them like a fiddle.
There's absolutely no evidence for that. We see the number of Democrats that have come out in favor of impeachment. And not only that, the latest Pew Research poll says that 54% of all Americans are in favor of impeachment. So we don't just have the Democratic Congress. We have all of America now. Those numbers have gone up steadily. You look back in September, those numbers were under 50%. Mm-hmm. Now they're at 54%. And it's not this witch hunt, as the Republicans like to claim. And it's not this Ukraine thing. It's a legitimate violation of the Constitution. And the Congress has a duty, a constitutional duty, to provide oversight to this president that Republican congressmen and senators refuse to do.
I mean, do you think, though, why not just hold the vote that Tommy's
because
talking
it's
about?
Not
but why not hold and take
not?
That talking point away? Then she doesn't say that anymore.
That's not the requirement, and this president will move the ball again. They hold a vote, and then he'll have another excuse. He does not want to cooperate. He's made that very clear. He's issued a letter to the Congress. His lawyer had come up with some theory that no legal person on the planet understands because it's completely made out of whole cloth, which says the president somehow is above the law, and he's not required to comply with subpoenas that are constitutionally
again,
issued by the Congress.
Not
skirting the issues at all. We don't have to do that. You can't make up rules.
To your point, though, say President Hillary Clinton called the president of Russia and said, I want you to investigate Mitt Romney or this one or that one or some other Republican or Donald Trump as she was president. You don't think that your side would be
pretty upset
about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm still actually, it's not as if that happened. We already know with the Clinton Foundation, there's a little bit of pay for play action there. That's also been under investigation. So to say that that is so outside of bounds that Hillary had done that, she's already done that.
But the question is the president,
foundation. This president has been hunted by the Democrats, by the mainstream media since the day he was elected. And so I would say to the Democrats, if you're so confident,
but
if 53%, let me answer the question.
Answer the question.
53% of Americans want to see impeachment, then let's take the vote and let's see what happens. But they know, that their polls, also told us Hillary Clinton was going to be president. The people of this country are behind their president. They're going to elect him again. I would like to see the Democrats do something else besides hunt this president, maybe get something else done for this nation
Get a whole lot done if the president wasn't obstructing justice and committing high crimes and misdemeanors.
Okay, bottom line, at this point next year, is Donald Trump still the president?
Hopefully not, based on what the votes are. If there were a vote today, Donald Trump would be impeached, hands down. Now, would he be removed from office? Because we know it's a two-part process. Not certain that the Democrats have the vote today to remove him, but it doesn't matter because the process requires them to do their constitutional duty, and that is to investigate when there are high crimes and misdemeanors, or at least allegations, and in this case, even plain sight high crimes and misdemeanors, and to take that vote, and they will take it.
Let's take the vote in 2020, and we're going to have Donald Trump as your president again, and then you guys can investigate him, which I'm sure will be for the next 4 years, so get ready for that.
Thinking, Tommy, right. But glad you're an optimist.
It's amazing how we brought everybody together on that.
So we go from the impeachment issue to the issue of the debate. This week, of course, we had the big Democratic debate. Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar getting a lot of love. But what did our panelists have to say? Let's go back to them.
All right. So what did you at home? What did our panel think of the debate? Back with us, Tommy Lahren, Areva Martin. Tommy, let's start with you. Your big takeaways from the debate.
Big takeaway, the winner was very clear. It was Donald Trump yet again. But
he wins when he isn't even on stage.
Well, absolutely. With these 12 candidates, it wasn't hard. But at the end of the day, as far as doing well, I'm glad that Mayor Pete kind of backed Elizabeth Warren into the corner on how she was going to pay and why she wasn't answering that question about raising taxes on the middle class. And then also backing Bernie Sanders in the corner again on their utopian dreams of socialism. How are you going to pay for all those things? So I think that he did a good job as far as Democrats are concerned, and he really put Beto in his place, and I always like to see it. So I think Pete did a great job as far as Democrats are concerned.
I got to send this to the Mayor Pete team. Tommy Lahren endorsing Mayor Pete. How about that?
I think we saw
the other 11, okay?
There we go.
Well, I think we saw just a stage full of rock stars. I think it was the Democrats at their best. There were great moments probably from every candidate that was on that stage. I think the women, which is so important to me as a woman and as a minority woman, to see women represented so well, whether it's Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren or Klobuchar, I just think the women represented so well. And I think little girls and women all over this country were probably sitting at home cheering, says, yes, I can be the president. I can do what these badass women are doing. So I think it was a great night for the female Democratic candidates.
We know you on this show have backed Kamala Harris in the past.
Yes, I do.
We saw a bit of a fight between two of the leading women on this issue of whether President Trump's Twitter account should be suspended. Let's take a look at that.
Twitter should be held accountable and shut down that site. It is a matter of safety and corporate accountability.
What do you make it? Do you agree with her on that?
Well, Before I answer that question, I also want to say to Tommy that the top four or five Democrats have consistently polled ahead of Donald Trump.
And so almost, did Hillary
in almost
2016.
Every head-to-head poll that has been taken since Biden has gotten into the
hat
race.
On that, Areva.
All
Would
of the top Democratic candidates beat Donald Trump. So, now back
Let's
to your question.
The question. Back, it's sounding like
gonna,
you're on the Democratic debate
I'm
stage.
Gonna answer,
answering a question
I'm
there.
I'm going to answer the question. And I do believe that Donald Trump, as Kamala Harris has, I think, so eloquently stated, is like a kid with a machine gun when it comes to how he uses Twitter, because he's reckless, and we know that he engages in bullying techniques and tactics on that social media platform. And I question whether someone else that didn't have the title of president, if they engaged in the same kind of, they had the same level of engagement and the kinds of tweets that Donald Trump has become famous for, would that person still be able to utilize that social media platform? And I would submit that person would not.
They
would be banned.
We still have this great thing right now because we do exist under a Republican president and will again. We have this great thing called the First Amendment. The Democrats want to go out of their way to limit that. So from that debate, I took away something very important. It was control, tax, confiscate. They want to go after the First Amendment. They sure as heck want to go after the Second. But the fact that we're having a presidential candidate sit on the stage and argue with another presidential candidate over whether Donald Trump should be banned from Twitter just shows how out of touch the Democrats are with problems that are affecting average Americans. And to censor conservatives, I am a conservative. I exist in the social media world. We are already censored to such a high level. The fact that we've got Kamala on stage encouraging more of that is absolutely ridiculous.
First of all, let's be clear about this. The First Amendment is not and has never been absolute. And yes, there are First Amendment rights that everyone has, but those rights have to be curtailed when you get into bullying techniques, when you get into, racial baiting, when you get into intimidating. No, it's not about just benefiting the left. Let's talk about what social media does to suppress voters, African-American voters in particular. We saw that debate. We saw that issue being raised when Zuckerberg went to Georgetown University and talked about why they should not care about misinformation from political candidates on that social media platform. And that was, but I don't want to get too far into that, but
I would imagine you're probably in the passive support of the ACLU, right?
Who often talk
about the fact that they want to defend people's rights to say stuff even that they disagree with.
The First Amendment has limits, and you know that it has limits. Yeah. And when it gets into inciting violence, when it gets into provoking racial division, then yes, I think it's appropriate for a presidential candidate. I think it's appropriate for anyone in a leadership position to talk about these issues, because we have been, and we've witnessed the kinds of voter suppression, racial divisions, and other things that have been perpetrated on these social media sites. And it's, I think, everybody's responsibility
to
say enough is enough.
Good politics for her to do this?
I mean, I think it's absolutely good politics for her and everyone else on that stage and everyone else that's in a leadership role to talk about the role that social media plays in our politics today, and how do we prevent the kind of misinformation that we saw in the 2016 election. And we know that Donald Trump is not doing nearly enough to prevent the Russian interference with our political process. And if you care about this democracy, you have to care about what's happening on social media platforms.
Last word quickly, Tom.
Oh, I do care what's happening on social media, and I think that all Americans want to protect and defend their right to free speech. And to say that what Donald Trump tweets goes so far beyond that it's limited by the First Amendment, I think is lunacy. But if that's the platform the Democrats want to run on, I wish him the best of luck.
Okay. And we wrap things up with a discussion about corruption and nepotism. Welcome back. This week, the White House announced that the G7 summit next year will be held at the president's own property, Doral in Miami. That announcement comes as the White House criticizes the Biden family for profiting off their own government service. Is this hypocritical or is it no big deal? Back with our panel, Areva Martin and Tommy Lahren. Tommy, is this a bad look when the White House keeps saying it's not good to profit off of all this stuff and then do
this? First of all, I'm going to say, I think just to remove any of the discussion, don't do it. However, I will say this president, when we talk about profiting off of your name because you're the president, this president, because he is the president, has lost more money, has taken more heat on his brands, his family's brands, of course, Ivanka's brand. Everyone involved with the Trump name has taken a huge hit by him being the president.
So to say that
he's profiting off it.
How do we know that? They haven't released any of their tax returns.
But they have to remove their name because people are vandalizing their stuff. Ivanka, the store's boycotting because they don't want Trump on anymore.
If we could get those tax returns, we could, see if this argument holds water.
And by the way, Jared and Ivanka made $82 million last year.
they're not profiting off of the president. They're not. Their brands are not profiting off of the president.
No, but you said that they're losing money, and the point is they made a whole lot of money. Let me just say, this is the most corrupt administration that we've seen in modern day history. And when Mick Mulvaney came out yesterday and tried to, you know, again, a page right out of Trump's playbook, which is to confuse, distract, and deny. Somehow make the argument that because Trump isn't, quote unquote, profiting from the summit being at his golf course, that somehow made it legitimate. Yeah. And that is completely a distortion of the Constitution. Article 1 and Article 2 make it very clear that a president, a sitting president, should not profit from a foreign or a domestic entity while he's in office. And you cannot deny, and that the Constitution doesn't mention anything about profit or revenue. Those are economic terms. They're not legal terms. And it is a violation of the Emoluments Clause, and it shouldn't happen.
Okay. You know what? I just want to wrap things up, even though you disagree on most everything. You're both so civil to each other, and I think that's great.
Not only that, do we disagree on a lot of things, we agree on one thing, that it's your birthday today.
Oh, yes.
Our thanks to Tommy Lahren and to Areva Martin, and thanks to both of them for coming to the station on my birthday. What a great birthday to be able to spend it with people that I really like. I'm doing a show that I really love. I am so grateful for everybody that listens to this every week. Or if this is your first time, welcome. We hope encourage you to talk to your friends, let people know about what we're doing. We're trying to get the message out there. And this week is a good example of what we've seen before, which is two people with strong perspectives who don't get to see each other very often, having a civil, if spirited, dialogue, which is also kind of fun to listen to. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening to Issue Us.